This is a tale of a dog. Roll, roll. This is a tale of a dog. Roll, roll. This is a tale of a dog. He barks. Oh, bow, wow, wow. He runs. Oh, bow, wow, wow. Chews on his chewy toy. Oh, bow, wow, wow. Now he's done. Oh, bow, wow, wow. He smiles.
You are listening to CFRO 102.7 on your FM dial, and this show is Animal Voices. The weekly show presented through the cooperative efforts of three local groups: Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection.
Yes, sir.
The things aren't going on.
Hello, are you there?
No. I can. I don't know what the hell.
Isn't there another light over there that's supposed to go on? Isn't this light supposed to go
on? What the hell is going on? What? No.
Maybe we can get Mark back.
No, I can do everything.
Tale of a dog, roll, roll. This is the tale of a dog. He jumps, oh, bow, wow, wow. Fetches sticks, oh, bow, wow, wow. Stays by my side all night, oh, bow, wow, wow. If I am sick, oh, bow, wow, wow. He naps. This is a tale of a dog. This is a tale of a dog. This is a tale of a dog. Bow, wow, 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 wow.
Okay. Very sorry about that. A little technical difficulties. Let's go on with the show.
You are listening to CFRO 102.7 on your FM dial. Welcome to Animal Voices, the weekly program presented through the cooperative efforts of three local groups, Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection, Earth Save Canada, and the Vancouver Humane Society. My name is Marge Adams, and in the studio with me today are Hazel Schmelzer, a regular contributor, and John Pranger, who is a co-host, and today he's serving as our technician in the absence of Alan Jensen, who is away on vacation. Today we have two guests lined up for the show, and they are a member of the Vancouver Parks Board, Commissioner Loretta Woodcock, and she's going to be telling us about the Vancouver Aquarium and the recent change made in the legislation, and the MLA, Michael Sather, who is the MLA for Maple Ridge area. Our major topics will be the expansion of the Vancouver Aquarium in Stanley Park, and we'll also be talking about organic farming and probably the blueberry farm out in Maple Ridge that is in threat of being taken over for a highway. Now, John, could we just put this over to you and have a short musical interlude, or am I asking too much at the moment with our difficulties? Perhaps we could just have Hazel, who's ever ready, I'm sure.
I'm ready.
To do a true story for us.
Sure. Is that okay?
That's wonderful.
John?
Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks, Marge. You know, I've got some great animal stories to tell, and I have a story today, and it's a love story. And it's a love story between two cats, two incredible cats with very different personalities. One of them was my cat, Teddy, and we used to call him Ticked Off Teddy because he was always ticked off. And he was just the most miserable cat in the whole world. You couldn't pat him. Every time you wanted to give him a pat, he'd cringe, and his ears would go down, and he'd skulk away. And as soon as you touched him, his hair would go up, and he didn't want to be touched. He was acting like a cat that had been abused and hit, but he never was. He lived with us with his mother. His mother, she had about 3 kittens, and we got homes for them all except for Teddy. And so Teddy, he had it good. He was there living with his mom, but he was just so ticked off. His ears were always down. He was so miserable. I took him to the vet. I thought for sure he had the ear mites, and he was checked over, and he was fine, and there was just nothing wrong. I think he was just a little mentally ill. life is going along nicely in our home with a mom cat and Ticked Off Teddy. And one day, a cat is brought to me. My son brought me this beautiful black, pure black kitten. He was about 6 months old. He was a stray. Somebody found him on the Sky Train, and they were trying to get rid of him, and my son took him and said, I'm going to take him to my mom, because I always ended up getting the strays and the mentally ill cats and the handicapped dogs. And this beautiful cat came to live with us, and we called him Blackie. And he was he became a very big cat, a very big cat. Marge, I don't know if there's a type of cat that's totally black, but they're big.
Yeah, I heard of it. My niece has one. I haven't seen it, but she says it's a particular breed, and I can't remember the name.
Mm-hmm. He was very big and so intelligent. And, of course, when he came to live with us, he was about 6 months old, and he was very playful. And he would attack poor Teddy continuously. I mean, Teddy just minding his own business, and next thing you know, this big, rambunctious black kitten would come pouncing out from somewhere, and we would watch the window, and we'd watch this whole thing happen, and he'd get poor Teddy, and he'd wrestle him, and Teddy, of course, was so miserable, didn't want anybody touching him, spending any time with him whatsoever. And so the next thing you know, every time Teddy would have a little sleep, I had this lovely little basket. And Teddy and Mom Cat would always sleep in it. But then Blackie started coming in and you know, tiptoeing around them while they're sleeping, getting all nice and comfy with them. And much to Teddy's dismay. But what would happen, Blackie would wrap his arms around Teddy and just start licking him and licking him and licking him and just holding him down, and Teddy is struggling like mad to get away, and just trying like his best to get away, and this big huge cat would just wrap his legs and his arms around Teddy and just hold him down, like almost in a terrible, you know, getting a headlock thing, and then he would just lick him and lick him and lick his face and lick his ears, and you know, this was going on, and we would sit back and say, look at this is so funny. Poor Teddy, you know, he just hates it, and Blackie will not stop licking him. And anyways, this goes on and on and on, and the next thing you know, Teddy is really enjoying it. He's enjoying being licked, and he's enjoying being loved and caressed and held. And Teddy ended up becoming a very nice cat, a beautiful cat, and I think it was just from all the, I think that Blackie just knew instinctively that Teddy really needed this. And I think, Blackie needed it too. But I really, he didn't bother with the mom cat, but it was just Teddy, and he just always would zero in on this poor, miserable cat. And I remember one day I went to the vet, and I took them in, and I was getting them for their shots or something, and I was telling him the story, and he just thought it was a wonderful story, because it really, Teddy changed. He wasn't a totally really nice cat, but he changed a lot, and he became more loving and more open to being touched and petted.
Isn't that wonderful? And the cats could sense the need of the others.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful story. Let's have something sort of lighthearted for a moment. This is called Segregated on the Bus. It was rush hour, and when the bus finally arrived, it was packed. Just reminds me of our city situation in Vancouver in the last few days. I tried to force my way on, but no one would budge, although there was more than ample room in the back. Then the bus driver took over. "Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen," he shouted. "Will all the beautiful, smart people please move to the back of the bus, and all the ugly, stupid people stay at the front?" It's wonderful. I remember having the odd humorous bus driver. Yeah. They're great creatures, and they really lighten the ride home. It's wonderful. Now, perhaps we're going to have our guest on shortly, aren't John?
Yeah, but we've got a little time for this little item here, which is that flu vaccines are not worth the trouble. And this is from the Times Online, which is timesonline.co.uk. And October 27th is a report that flu vaccines may be far less effective at combating seasonal outbreaks than previously thought, researchers say, adding that they may not be worth the cost and effort required to produce them. According to a review published today, there is little clinical evidence that the vaccines reduce death significantly, or that they reduce hospital stays and time off work among those most at risk from seasonal flu, including the over 65s and those with chronic heart and lung conditions. Public policy worldwide recommends the use of inactivated influenza vaccines, which are those that contain dead viruses and are given with a needle in the arm, to prevent outbreaks. More than 15 million doses of vaccine have been ordered for use this winter in Britain. But according to Tom Jefferson, a vaccines expert, vaccines given to children under 2 have the same effect as if they were given a dummy drug, except for the fact that many poisons are included in that dummy drug. He is calling for an urgent reevaluation of vaccination campaigns. Writing in the British Medical Journal, he says that because influenza viruses mutate and vary from year to year, it is difficult for scientists to study the precise effects of vaccine, and that most existing studies are of poor quality. Responding to Dr. Jefferson's comments, David Salisbury, director of immunization at the Department of Health, gave it this spin. He said, "In older people, protection against infection may be less, but there's good evidence showing that immunization reduces bronchopneumonia, hospital admissions, and mortality." Mm-hmm. Not so.
Thank you.
Well,
for
there's
that,
a very
John.
Elaborate report on the.
I have something on the flu vaccine right here from the Vancouver Sun, John.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the headline is, bird flu vaccine leaves 10 Canadians dead.
Holy.
Imagine that. 10 Canadians have died and at least 74 had adverse reactions after taking Tamiflu. But Health Canada didn't issue a public update until the flu drug about the flu drug until Wednesday. This was yesterday's paper. The update came more than 2 weeks after the international warnings were posted of adverse reactions to the medication among children and youth. Wednesday's Health Canada information update said people in other countries, particularly children and teens in Japan, exhibited strange behavior, including hallucinations and self-injury after taking the drug.
And suicide.
Oh, sounds serious, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to question drugs and vaccines in particular. Now, we just have a couple of minutes before our guest is expected to call, so perhaps I could just tell a little bit about the topic she's going to be covering. Mm-hmm. Okay. Last Monday evening, there was an unusually well-attended Parks Board meeting that took place at the Hastings Community Centre. There were 120 people. Now, that was a very large group for a Parks Board meeting. The meeting lasted 6 hours, and the issue on the agenda was a controversial one, as you might have expected. It was the proposed $80 million expansion of the Vancouver Aquarium, and this is a 1.5-acre expansion into Stanley Park. And what is planned for this expanded area is new, larger pools for the cetaceans and a gift shop. And as well as the cetaceans, there will be sea otters, sea lions, dolphins, I guess those are cetaceans, and beluga whales. And as well as that, a public plaza. Now, 52 people spoke on that issue, and I'm sure a lot of them were opposed to the expansion. The proposal did pass with the 5 of the 6 voting members of council approving of it, and one commissioner who did not. Now, we have that commissioner on the phone now, I believe. Her name is Loretta Woodcock, and she is a COPE commissioner on the Vancouver Parks Board. And she courageously stood up and voted, as she believed, against that motion. Now, is Ms. Woodcock? Yeah. Hello, Loretta.
Yes, hi, Marg. It's Loretta.
Hi. Welcome to Animal Voices. It's a pleasure to have you here. Now, the issue of the aquarium expansion, it certainly did arouse a lot of interest. There's no doubt about that. And but perhaps you could tell us why the issue was so controversial.
Every time the aquarium has any expansion, it's always controversial. And there's a number of facets to this controversy. First of all, it is in Stanley Park, and we have 210 parks in Vancouver, but Stanley Park is the most cherished park in the city, and anything that goes on in there, whether it's an activity or whether it's an installation of any kind, people rise up in arms because they want to keep Stanley Park as it is. The second issue here is that with 1.5 acres of parkland in Stanley Park. Actually, I shouldn't say that's the second issue. That's part of the expansion issue. The second issue here is the what the expansion was all about. Now, the aquarium has some really good displays within the facility. They have some galleries. They have display galleries. They have a theater. It's the pools that cause such controversy. And the pools are going to be expanded and so that they can increase the numbers of dolphins and whales that they currently have. They want to end up with a total of 8 whales and 8 dolphins. It's the pool expansion that is the second controversy here.
How many do they have right now?
I believe right now they have 4 belugas. They've got 2 of them out. They've got 4 in here, and then they've got 2 elsewhere. So they've got a total of 6 at the moment. And dolphins, they have 4 dolphins as well.
Oh, I see. Okay, so that's so now they're going to have, you said they were going expanding to 8, didn't you?
Their plan is to end up eventually with a total of 8. They won't exceed 8, but their plan is to have 8 and 8.
I see. Okay, so that is the controversial part. I know a lot of people have worked for years to try and free the whales, and without success. It's a very emotional issue with a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, and because primarily these creatures are originally out of a wild environment. They were removed from their family pods out of a wild environment, and they do travel substantive distances. A whale travels 100 kilometers in a day, and then they have their social circle, and they're removed from that, and they're normally under traumatic circumstances. I wouldn't say intentionally. Sometimes they're caught in nets, et cetera, but they're removed and they're put into the pools area, and it is a much smaller environment than what they're accustomed to.
Oh, yes, and surely the lack of exercise must do harm to their bodies, I would think. And the other thing I don't like is the sonar, their sonar ability, and with those concrete walls so close at hand, the reverberation must be very difficult to withstand.
I even wonder if they use their sonar because they don't have anybody to call to. And as you say, if they use it and it's debilitating, then of course they probably, that's one function that it's a natural function that they may no longer do.
Maybe they would lose it perhaps through lack of use or maybe through damage with I guess I don't understand enough, but it seems like torture to me. Now, one thing I would like to clarify is, what is the relationship between the Vancouver Aquarium and the City of Vancouver?
Thanks for asking that, because that is very confusing. A lot of people think that the aquarium belongs to the city and that the park board, it's part of the park board functions. It's a tenant. We have a tenant-landlord relationship with the aquarium, and it happens to be in a park. The aquarium is a non-profit organization in the sense that they get their funding from grants, and they put their whatever profits they do have back into their facilities. So they are definitely not part of the City of Vancouver.
I see. So in other words, as a landlord, you can pretty well set down the conditions of the lease, can't you?
Well, as a landlord, we have legal obligations and liability issues. Mm-hmm. So when there's a lease involved, we're not able to open the lease up, and that has been the controversy in the past because of the bylaw. It was an unusual situation where they actually implanted the bylaw right inside the lease.
So tell us what the bylaw is, will you?
The bylaw talks about what the conditions are that the aquarium can have whales and dolphin cetaceans. And basically what it says is that they can have them as long as they're caught from the wild prior to September 1996, or if they're born in captivity. And also, if there was it gives them the opportunity, if there's a member of an endangered species, a cetacean species, they can have that as long as they bring it into the park before they can get a permission from the park board that they can bring an endangered species, which they don't have right now. And they can bring animals in if they need rehabilitation. There's always been an expectation that the aquarium has put out there that they bring them in for rehab so they can release them. But once they go into the aquarium for display, they're never released. There has never been a history of any release. They do have rehabilitation facilities outside the aquarium, and that's where they do the rehab and release.
So that really shouldn't be part of your lease to the aquarium, should it?
I wouldn't have allowed it, but, you know, this is previous boards. This bylaw was changed in 1996, and the reason why is because it has been a long-term controversy. The aquarium has had cetaceans in pools since 1954, but it's only really became a controversy, I would say, probably through the 70s. And it became quite heightened in the 90s, and they endeavored to put some conditions around the aquarium. And the final agreement was a bylaw, because otherwise the aquarium was able to do anything they wanted in terms of how they obtained the animals. And then, so there was conditions put around the bylaw, and the bylaw was also inserted into the lease with agreement, which is a very unusual place for a bylaw to go.
Yes, and there is a problem, and it was a problem still, well, less of a problem now, I guess, but the date of the bylaw is what the lease expires 2028, is it?
Well, the original lease that they put in, they put the bylaw in the lease in 1998, and the lease was expiring, the lease agreement was expiring in 2015, which would obviously, there would be an option for renewal, which the aquarium would definitely do. But that basically meant that the park board couldn't make any changes to the bylaw without forcing the lease open. And to force over a contract with any organization, whether it's a business or a nonprofit, there's a huge liability attached to that. So from a taxpayer mm-hmm. point of view, the park board was never able to change the bylaw outside the lease. It has now been taken out of the lease upon, it was insistence by the COPE commissioners, there's two of us, we actually insisted that it has to come out of the lease because the lease is being renewed for 20 years. That's a long time to not allow public discourse.
It has just now been extended to for 20 years with this latest vote?
The lease agreement was expanded for 20 years because of the amount of money that was going into this rebuilding of the facility of the aquarium. Whenever we have any huge amount of capital injection, like $80 million into a park area, the lease is extended based on the value of the capital that's being put in there.
I see. And that it was, you said, I believe, to 2015, the lease.
Well, currently it's 2015.
Yeah, so it's now, 20 years.
Now, with the approval that came through on Monday night, once they start building the pools, which won't be immediately because it has to go through, they still have to get their funding in place. And on top of that, they have to go through the city process, the development permitting process. By the time they're done, we've given them till the end of 2008 to start this project so it doesn't go on forever. And then at that point in time, when they do their groundbreaking, that lease comes into effect for 20 years. So basically, we have a lease in effect till 2028, and to not allow any opportunity for the public to discuss the bylaw for 22 years was just unacceptable.
Uh-huh, yeah. Now, $80 million does sound like a lot of money, and I guess...
It is.
How are they going to raise that? You said mainly through grants is how
they're
they get
going
the money?
To be getting federal grants, and there's going to be some private funders that are going to be putting that money forward. What we did do with the protracted discussions that we've had with the aquarium since June, is we managed to say the public amenities that you're putting in as part of this agreement, which is, for example, a new washroom facilities, those come first. We want to make sure that those come first before you start to expanding your aquarium, because we want to make sure they don't run out of money. We want to get the public amenities.
See. Before the pools are built.
Right. We insisted on having the public amenities like this plaza rebuilt, the washrooms. We insisted on having those built first.
Oh, yeah. What about the restaurant? I understand there's going to be a restaurant as part
of
the new
building. There's going to be a restaurant. Currently, there is a food outlet in the public plaza area.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's going to be a restaurant now, and that restaurant has to go through the design process and the location, et cetera, has to go through a regular public consultation and the design process with the city before it is finally approved.
Now, that will conflict as far as profitability with the Parks Board.
This restaurant does not belong to the aquarium.
The restaurant,
part of the agreement was that the restaurant was going to be built by the aquarium, but the Park Board owns the restaurant and they can lease it out, can set up a lease with anybody.
Oh, I see.
So the proceeds from the restaurant actually come to the Park Board, not to the aquarium.
Ah, I see. They have a very considerable revenue, I recently read, of $26 million a year. And the rent is $45,000 a year.
Yes, that was a point of upset for me for years, because it's a huge facility operating public land, and there's maintenance that the Park Board has to do outside that facility, like garbage pickup and sidewalk trail rebuilding and road work that we were paying for. And it was far exceeding the $45,000. And one of the things that we absolutely insisted on was that there's going to be revenue commissions coming from the food facility inside the aquarium, which will, at minimal, double the $45,000. And then in addition to that, there is a maintenance agreement where they pay for the maintenance around the facility. So we got, from a revenue point of view, we got more than we ever had. So, I mean, there's some things in this approval that was good, in the sense that the Park Board's getting more money for operating budgets, which keeps our taxes low. But the key point here was that I think these pools, by 2028, I think these pools will be relics. I think that there's just going to be so advanced technology, which is already being displayed in other aquarium facilities in the States. This technology will be outdated. Displaying wild creatures will just be outdated.
Yeah, in such unnatural situations, it's misleading, if anything, because you're seeing you're like going to a prison to visit the convicts and pretending that that's like a normal society, and it just isn't.
Well, these animals are very intelligent, and
absolutely.
I think that, and they're very mobile. And they're very social, and I think that makes it. I don't think that these are appropriate kind of species to be put in an environment that's an unnatural environment.
Was that the reason why you voted against this motion?
Yeah, and then here's how I assessed it. We're always looking at use of green space in all of our parks, and so we look at the green space. For example, we had an approval for the Hillcrest Park, Nat Bailey Stadium area, and that's an Olympic facility. So we had to take additional green space out of that park. I looked at that and I said, is this an acceptable way of using up additional green space? And the decision was that, yes, it was for recreation for the community. And so I agreed to that kind of expansion on green space. However, I looked at this particular issue and I said, are pools an appropriate use of green space? And I looked at it and said, no, they're not, because I just think, for me personally, I with all the things that you have mentioned today, I just weighed it out and I said, no, there's you can't do that. Well, you can do it, obviously, but I just felt that it's just an outdated use of pools are outdated. I think they will become outdated more and more in terms of harboring large creatures like whales and dolphins. So that was the basis that I voted against the it was a land use decision.
I see. Well, I think on the cruelty to animals issue, you did the right thing as well, because I think it's cruel to hold these animals captive in small, some people call them puddles, when they're used to swimming the oceans. You know, it's just an appalling situation in my mind. But anyway, I'm sure there are some positives in other people's minds. What are the positives of continuing this aquarium?
Well, the bylaws outside the lease, I think that's a huge opportunity for the public to hold the aquarium, hold them to looking at other alternative means of education around cetaceans in particular. It allows us to do that. So from that point of view, I think that, and I think the aquarium heard the message out there that there's a lot of conflict over the issue of animal display, in particular, I should say, this kind of animal display. I don't think displaying guppies as an example is cruel, but I think that this particular kind of animal display is cruel. And even though they take good care of the animals, and I've met some of these staff, the staff are very dedicated people, and they care a lot about the animals, but I think just it's the bottom line is they shouldn't be there in the first place. So I think the bylaw is very positive, positive that we did get some public improvements around the aquarium. We got maintenance dollars out of the aquarium. We also got some revenue from the aquarium that we didn't have before from that point of view. But I don't think it's worth the approval itself. But if you have to say, well, let's look at it from more than just the negative angle, there is some positives to this.
Yes, well, that's good. That is good to hear, the positive as well as the negative. Of course, on our show, we hear more of the animal rights outlook, which is to release the animals, and my sympathy is on that side.
And isn't that characterized as a fringe group? Isn't that minimized by Dr. Nightingale as a fringe group?
I think that I don't think they are a fringe group. I think that they are the conscience of society. I think some of the ways they perhaps bring the issues forward, maybe people, determine them as a fringe group, and maybe some of the ways they do it. But I think that they're the conscience of society, and they hold us to account in terms of, let's look at these things. What's acceptable today won't be acceptable tomorrow. We need these people to keep us aware of these things.
Yes, and remember years ago, I can't remember the year, but the public voted no for the zoo in Stanley Park, and this is a very comparable, having those animals in captivity is comparable to the zoo. I remember seeing, when I was a child, going to Stanley Park and seeing a brown bear sitting in a cage, a concrete floor and bars around him, and people throwing peanuts at him, and he was heavy, fat, logy looking, and I, at that time, as a child, I felt so sorry for that bear. But I think people have come a long way from those days. But even at that time, or soon after that, the public voted against the zoo. So I think that we are moving in that direction.
Yes, I think we are. I think at one point in time, it was okay to have that kind of zoo, like the old bear grotto and the cages where the primates were in. I always felt extraordinarily comfortable when I walked through Stanley Park and saw that. And I think that, that's why I said, this is one of the reasons why, the other reasons I voted against this is because I said, today it's okay. But, we've got a whole generation ahead of us before this lease agreement expires, and by that time, hopefully, it won't be okay.
Yeah, it is. That's a long way off, isn't it, 2028? But anyway, I guess we're going to have to close down on this interview, Loretta, but I certainly appreciate you being on the air with us today and expressing your views and telling us about the aquarium.
It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You have been listening to an interview with Parks Commissioner Loretta Woodcock, who was telling us about the aquarium voting that occurred last Monday evening, I guess, or last Friday evening. John, do you have something?
Yeah, and our next guest is going to be Michael Saylor of the MLA for Maple Ridge Meadows, and we'll be right back after this.
crusty on the outside, but inside you're soft as goo. Blue muscle, you've neither mouth nor feet. If you can't chase your supper down, how is it possible? As I walk along the shore, I see your empty shells are everywhere. I count of two and three and four. We blame it on the sea stars because we're their favorite treat. They pry up.
Up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. Charge the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. That you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They pay paradise, put up a parking lot.
The longer it takes for produce to reach your table, the more your body misses out on its nutritious value. 2 days after harvesting, spinach loses almost half of its beneficial nutrients. Imported foods can lose even more nutrients during long transports, and it is difficult to determine when the crops were harvested. The half-life of fruits and vegetables varies, but one thing remains the same. Fresh is best.
And that's why it's so important to have a local agriculture, so we're not dependent on others, and when catastrophe strikes, we may be in a very difficult situation. Well, the TransLink is planning to build a four-lane connector through the middle of the only certified organic farm in Pitt Meadows and Maple Ridge. And Michael Sather is the MLA for Maple Ridge Pitt Meadows, NDP, and serves as the opposition critic for intergovernmental relations. He's taken up the cudgels for the farmer, Ting Wu. Hi, Michael. How are you? Can we not hear him?
No, can't hear.
Put him on studio. Oh, God, what? I don't want to start telling him what to do.
What's happening?
Are you pressed studio? Did you press studio?
Second. Hello, Mike, are you there?
I am.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got a little mixed up. I'm a technical genius. Are you still married?
Am I still married?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh,
after four or five days, that's almost a week now.
Well, congratulations, and I hope you and your lovely lady have many happy years together.
Thank you very much.
And another question. Are you still the owner-operator of Hummingbird Nature Tours?
No, it's been quite a number of years now since that time, but it was a great time.
Oh, I'll bet. Well, that sounds like a wonderful kind of occupation.
Yeah, it was.
Well, now, you're in the legislature now, and, of course, there was a sitting on Wednesday and Thursday and on Monday. Can you tell us what transpired, if anything, with regard to the Formosa Nursery and the organic blueberry farm that you're trying to save from the predations, if you ask me, of TransLink?
Yeah, well, we did get an opportunity, myself and Corky Evans, the agricultural critic, to bring forth the issue again. On Monday, we each had a half hour, and I talked almost entirely, in fact, it was entirely, I believe, about Formosa Nursery and some of the other related issues around farming in my area.
Mm-hmm.
I know that, that Corky had also talked to the minister about it, but Minister Bell of Agriculture, but we're not seeing any movement, John, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. TransLink has refused to move. Now, can you tell me, there was something you said the other 2 weeks ago when we interviewed you, which I should have followed up on, but I didn't, which is that the other people involved were three householders, is that right, or three property owners, or four, only one of which wanted was not happy with the situation as the compromise led to. Is that right?
Well, there's four properties immediately adjoining Formosa Nursery, and there's kind of a bit of a before and after story here. Before being back about 2003, 2004, I'm not sure. I know there's one of those four landowners for sure that was opposed because he's still vocally opposed. I'm not sure exactly the position of the other three. But more recently, since this fall, Mr. Wu talked to all three of them, and the remaining three, one actually signed his petition to have the road moved, and the others reportedly said they weren't opposed to it. So, you know, there were some complaints from some other neighbors, but not as close as them, not adjoining.
And Mr. Wu's stoical patience led him to accept the situation and not really put up much of a fight, or what?
Well, yes and no. I think that I wasn't discussing it with him, but talking to him about it at that time, back in 03, 04, but talking to him about it now, the very clear picture I got was that he didn't understand, basically, that he could even say no, if you will. I don't think that, and I don't think TransLink encouraged him to think that he could in any way say no.
Mm-hmm.
And he subsequently, I mean, because when we, the political people, got involved, Corky Evans and I, it certainly was clear that Mr. Wu and his wife didn't have a strong understanding of the political process. Mm-hmm. So it was a learning experience for them. But he did make the choice himself to, after being trying to cooperate with TransLink and them actually not being very cooperative with him, he finally realized that he would say no, and he did say no. And I think he was, although they've been apparently unmovable to this point anyway, I think he found it was quite educational for him in the respect that he found that, hey, you can speak up, you can, people will join forces with you and the like.
And many organizations have also rallied with him, eh?
Yeah, that's great. There's been food organizations, agricultural organizations, environmental organizations. It's been really good.
Well, according to one report, he says he's tired of being bullied, so maybe he feels that he's been bullied and taken advantage of, and he's not going to take it anymore. And you have said, or rather, Corky Evans has said that the most expensive way to build this road is through the farm because of the court costs and all the delays will cause. So are you still up to that?
Well, it's difficult to say, because then what makes it difficult is the somewhat phantom late charges that are mentioned by TransLink and would be coming, they say, from the P3 contractor. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no, when I talked to the head of Bill Finger Burger Canada in Toronto, he wasn't aware, and I suppose it's not entirely surprising, but he wasn't aware of the amount of these charges. And I wonder, when they started talking $10 and $11 million, where in fact these came from. Is it based on, it sounds more like to me that, well, that's what, if we choose to charge that, we could. I mean, they certainly didn't provide any documentation or any justification, really. All they said when I questioned them on it, they being TransLink, was, well, we talked to the contractor. But, there was nothing like, well, this would be $10 million based on this and this and this.
You mean the difference in charge between moving the road and having it where it was originally planned for?
Yeah, when I say it's difficult to assess what is the more expensive option, it's because of these threats of multi-million dollars cost if it were moved. But it was interesting, another point that was brought up, I did a little research on the archaeological status of the right-of-way, and they actually moved the road, the right-of-way, just the other side of the nursery.
So there's a road there right now?
The right-of-way. They moved the planned right-of-way, because of a major archaeological site just across the street from Formosa Nursery. So now the right-of-way runs just alongside where that property was, that they found the archaeological site on, a major village, apparently.
Oh, yes.
And lo and behold, there's more significant material on the new right-of-way.
Wow.
And so one of the questions that was asked to TransLink, well, this is obviously setting your timetable back. Who's paying those late charges? And if you are set back for archaeological reasons, then doesn't that, in effect, sort of nullify your argument that you would be set back by moving this roadway and therefore would have to charge these multi-million-dollar charges?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, does that mean that there's an archaeological site under the bushes?
No.
Sort of thing,
they didn't find any material on Formosa Nursery, but just across the street from them, where the roadway runs through.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the next move going to be? Any idea? What do you think you're going to do?
Well,
Mr. Wu shouldn't lose his farm. That's absurd.
It's absolutely absurd. And everybody that comes to see it just says, well, this is ridiculous. How could this happen?
It's heartless, because they make a living. They've been making a living for years. It's their whole life.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Wu has sought legal advice, is understandable, and that's beyond my realm of expertise, so there's that aspect.
Mm-hmm, good.
But in addition to that, I don't know if you knew, John, there's a plan afoot, believe it or not, to put yet another road through his property.
What kind of a road?
This would be the, an extension off the connector.
Oh, boy.
Which would, and I don't think there's any justifiable reason for it, and I've looked into it a bit and will look into it further. And it would run, it, and it has to run the way they have it configured, and it's in on the Pitt Meadows municipality official community plan as a distinct possibility. Those that are promoting this road have gotten a backing, unfortunately, from some other farmers who think that it would take pressure off their area. But interestingly enough, the roadway, at least one of the alignments of this extension, would first of all take out more agricultural land, but secondly, I have it on good authority that there's an active application and interest by Walmart to put in a facility there. So it looks to me like this road may have as much to do with Walmart as anything else. But yeah, I know it's just phenomenally unbelievable, and I'm definitely opposed to that, and am working diligently to try to prevent that.
Well, I say the plot sickens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my goodness, if there's anything that we can do to help, now the bulldozers aren't there yet, although the mayor and TransLink chair said that he would not send in the bulldozer until at least November 18th, which was the day after the next meeting of the TransLink board at which you all appeared. There are no bulldozers there yet, are there?
No, I think the weather has been too bad, uh-huh. for one thing, uh-huh. and there may be other reasons why they've held off as well. And I questioned him, TransLink, also on whether, you know, I said, look, this is a fairly long connector. You could start in other parts of it. Oh, no, no. They said, we have to do it all at once. So,
wow. Boy,
I don't know. Something
is brewing under all this. You know.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a very bad choice was made. I think that my assessment is that the powers that be thought that Mr. Wu wouldn't oppose them with any vigor. And so because it's clearly the wrong choice, I mean, anybody that goes there sees that. And so, but why did they do that? Because they got some complaints from some neighbors on the Maple Ridge side and who aren't actively engaged in farming, and instead took the swipe right through the middle of this farming operation. And when people sometimes see the map of the farm, it doesn't look like a huge piece because it goes along one side of the farm, more or less.
45 acres is a considerable piece of property.
Yeah, but if you see the map of it and it shows the roadway through it, the roadway doesn't run through the middle of the farm per se.
No.
It runs through the middle of the blueberry operation, which is the essence of the farm operation.
Oh, I didn't know there was more to the farm than that.
Yeah, there is. And so when TransLink has tried to, you know, they show this map saying, well, look, we're not taking all that much of the farm. Yeah, but wait a minute. You just neglected to explain that it's actually the viable part of the farm that's been there for 30 years that you're taking out the blueberry operation.
Yeah. Is the whole farm organic or just the blueberry?
No, it's not all organic. I think they're in the process of converting to organic, is my understanding, throughout, but I don't think it's all certified for organic yet.
All the more reason to keep it. Do you have any thoughts on that, the importance of organic agriculture, considering the global warming and all that sort of thing? And then after that, Marge has a question and...
Sure. I have strong feelings that we need to support organic. I come from an agricultural background, and I was up to my family's farm in northern Alberta, actually, this summer. And, modern farming is a high overhead and heavy inputs and fertilizer and pesticides and low commodity prices. It's a real squeeze for them. But,
and tremendous waste.
But... The thing that the use of pesticides really concerned me, and I saw something up there that I had never seen when I was back on the farm, if you will. They are using pesticides to, quote, ripen the crops.
Uh-huh.
So what they do, they can take a wheat, for example, they'll spray it just prior to harvest so that it kills the green material in the unripened wheat or other plants that are green that make it difficult to harvest it, and then they can harvest it more readily and because you have to, your grain has to be dry when you harvest it, or you have to dry it afterwards. So I was just like, my God, that's terrible.
That's just cynical manipulation rather than good gardening.
And it's scary. So we need to definitely support organic producers and. No, here's a good organic producer, and they're not being supported at all. They're being decimated.
Yeah, and you know, you have to wonder, maybe the government is so much in favor of massive industrial type of agriculture and horticulture and aquaculture. So you have to wonder about the program there, whether there's not something more involved in this appropriation than meets the eye. Here's my co-host.
Hello, Michael.
Hello.
Marge Adams.
Hi, Marge.
I worry about agriculture in general in British Columbia because it seems to me the agricultural land bank is not respected. Now, this property probably was not part of the agricultural land reserve. But
it is.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me...
Here's a cynical thing. When, if it's paved over, it's still in the land reserve, isn't it, Michael?
Well, that's what I've heard said. It definitely is in the agricultural land reserve.
Well, the government doesn't respect that reserve, does it?
No, unfortunately, and particularly in the lower mainland, it's the Fraser Valley, where, you know, the government will cite statistics that there's more land in the ALR than there was 10 years ago or 15 years ago, but the land that's being added is in the north. It's often rangeland. It's certainly not the high-capability agricultural land that we have down here.
It's a very small percentage of the province that is worthy of agriculture, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that it's a big, big mistake, especially for market gardens. We need them right near where the heart of the population is.
Yeah.
And we want to be able to get this produce to the market within a day. Otherwise, the nutrition diminishes. So.
Yeah, that's very important, and there's the whole aspect that John was referring to, you know, to global warming and how we have to cut down on our transportation input in terms of greenhouse gases, and so that local agriculture saves on a whole lot on transportation too.
Absolutely. Very, very important issue. Good luck with it.
Oh, thanks.
Well, you have enlightened opinions, and I thank you for sharing them with us, and keep us abreast, will you please, of the situation?
Sure will, John.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to an interview with Michael Souther, who is the MLA for Maple Ridge District, and John Pranger. So, John, thank you for that. And now we want to turn to Hazel and for a very short story. I wonder if we have enough.
2 minutes. Hurry up.
2 minutes?
Hurry up.
A Christmas story?
Sure. Got enough time for it.
2 minutes.
2 minutes? Okay. The story is a wonderful story. It wasn't my story. It was my neighbor's story. And it happened a few years ago with her beautiful dog that she has. She moved in her neighborhood, and the people that live next door to them had a dog, and it had puppies. And it was an outside dog. They kept the dog outside. And it's, you know, in a lot of properties, a lot of coyotes, and the dog was kept out there with her pups, and the coyotes came and ate some of the puppies. And but the people still, puppies were left, did not bring the pups in with the mother. They still left her out there. So eventually, I think there was like 6 puppies, and they all got eaten, except for one. And they kept this one dog, and the puppy by then was a little bigger and would go over to my neighbor's house and sit outside her door. And so they would bring the puppy in at night in their house. They have 3 boys, and they would bring this pup in. And okay, you know what? I got to hurry it up, and I can't hurry it up because it's a long story.
Okay, we'll do it next week.
Okay.
Sorry that we got interrupted like that. I thought maybe we could run an extra
minute.
Oh,
it's long.
Or so. Okay.
I'll tell it again another time.
I know. Well,
thank you. Now, thank you for listening to Animal Voices. You are listening to CFRO 102.7 on the FM dial. Please tune in to Animal Voices again next week at Friday noon, and we'll be back. Good afternoon.
Paradise, put up a parking lot.